you, Ursa.
Wouldn't you believe, Tom, 2 hours has flown by. I'm sure for the listener, it doesn't feel that way. Here we go. Hey, look at this. It's time for me to get in front of the wagon, and you get up there. That horse is already sitting right. Of course, his name is Patrick. The name of our old producer now has turned into a horse. There we go. All righty. Spreading 2 hours of news and opinion, also known as manure. And now we got one more hour to do this, and we head on back to the barn. And all righty. Let's see. A Seattle nun, Tom, is upset after she watches the shooting happen there in Connecticut. And she decides this is the that shooting that was the name of Newtown massacre.
Sandy Hook.
Sandy Hook, Newtown, yeah. She was so upset, she thought, well, you know what? This has got to be the turning point. People have got to realize that guns are a big, big problem. Got to do something about it. It didn't. Not much happened. But she decided, I want to be able to influence not the lawmakers necessarily. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the people that really are the problem. And that's the people that make the guns, because guns really are the problem.
So she decided to buy...
I barely got that out without my tongue flying out of the side of my mouth. But
I know,
ahead.
But you know, work with it, John. You'll eventually get used to that.
Right.
The truth hurts sometimes. So the nun decided to go ahead and buy some gun stock.
Uh-huh.
And she bought enough that she was allowed, you have to have a minimum of $2,000 worth required, to file a formal request to the bosses at the company,
mm-hmm.
to say, to request like a one-on-one with the board or whatever, to make whatever pitch you want to make.
Mm-hmm.
So she has this idea that she would like to talk to them about keeping better track of how their particular guns are used in acts of violence and crimes.
Uh-huh.
And so she went up the corporate ladder, and the corporate board, as is expected, decided, now we don't want to waste our time, or we don't want to deal with you. So no, we don't. We are not going to meet with you.
Mm-hmm.
So then they have the other option is to bring it before up to a vote of the shareholders,
yes.
the actual owners of the company. And she did, in fact, bring this up, because after all, you know, any shareholder can do this. And here's what she was requesting, that Sturm Ruger, that's the company. She called on them to track incidents of violence involving firearms,
mm-hmm.
to its firearms, to reveal what it's doing to make guns safer, including research on smart gun technology, mm-hmm. and to report on the risks that gun violence poses to the company's reputation and finances.
Uh-huh.
And the resolution happened to list how many of that company's guns had been used in mass shootings. Turns out it was 7, including the one by the teenager here in Mukilteo.
Uh-huh.
So they put it up to a vote, and they say that there have been 56 of these resolutions brought up before the shareholders in the past, and only one has passed in the entire, decade-long effort this has been going on. But this one, to the shock and surprise of everyone in the gun industry, mm-hmm. it passed.
Yeah.
The nuns' resolution passed to the tune of 69% support.
Mm-hmm.
And they say this is the most significant move. The gun control people are saying, we've been trying to do this for, you know, over a decade, and we've never gotten any headway. Here's a nun who made her case and, you know, sort of won the day among the shareholders. And so Danny Westneat does this article about her column, sort of heralding that this might be a new approach that people can take.
Yeah, well, that'll be great, because gun violence is strikingly down from 20 years ago. That's good news, right? And a number of homicides has dropped. That's good news. Number of people purchasing guns way up. So it's weird that people are buying these horrible things, but yet we're not seeing more people being murdered. Oh, although 56% of Americans, when surveyed by Pew, believe gun violence is up, but it's actually down. I'm just pointing out the inconsistency.
Are you arguing
with
her?
No. I know.
Are you part of the 31% that would have voted this down? This is not bad information.
No,
why
the story is this.
She
becomes a shareholder by buying $2,000 worth of shares.
Yes. Right?
And then you go to the shareholders meeting and you can propose something once you have a certain number of shares. And she proposes it, and the 60-some people say, and what they're basically saying is
69%.
100% realize that the majority of people that use a gun in the act of a crime, because laws are about stopping people from doing things that are wrong, because most law-abiding citizens abide laws. So the majority of people that will get that gun and use it in the act of a crime did not purchase that gun through a retail thing, did not go to a gun show, did not purchase that, but actually got the gun either from a relative like the mom that gave the kid, right? Or they got it illegally. So the whole thing is that this is a legal company, like the president of Ruger said to the New York Times, that she doesn't own a gun. She doesn't know about guns. She's basically anti-gun as far as he's concerned. We're not talking to her. That was his attitude.
Yes,
about the gun,
I know.
Right?
No, yeah. I think you are missing the point, John. Not that this is an anti-gun.
No, I understand that 60%. If those,
69, almost 70% of the people that are gun owners.
No. They are not gun owners.
Well, they have invested in a gun company.
Hey, Tom, guess what?
Yes.
You can be invested in a gun company and not be a gun owner.
Well, no, that's fine. But the idea that 69% of the people invested in a gun company think this is a good idea.
Right. Because
that's a positive sign.
They're
people
looking
aren't
at
so
it.
So blind like you that, anything that's about gun control is going to be negative.
No, I know.
It's about gun information.
I got the facts. I'm reading them. So I'm not blind to the perception that, gun violence is up and more guns equals. Let me finish. More guns equals more killing. I understand. The distinction is this. You can't prove to me that the people that voted on this thing, the 68%, are gun owners. What you can tell me is these are people that saw during the Obama administration that, hey, if you wanted to buy a high-flying stock, buy guns, because they were flying out the door and everybody was buying guns. Now the number of gun sales has dropped and a couple of these places are going into bankruptcy. But early on, if you wanted to make some money, you bought into the gun stock, Tom.
Okay.
Of the 68%, how many 69%. Of them are pro
69%?
How many of them are pro gun or how many of them are just pro business?
I would assume
we
that
don't
most
know.
Of them are pro gun.
Assuming
and pro
it on
business.
Upon what? Assuming it upon what?
Well,
your
it doesn't
knowledge
matter,
of guns
John, it's irrelevant. I mean, what I find cheering is the people who are actually investing and trying to make money and profit off guns, which is what these people are doing, have agreed by a huge margin, by the way, that they think it would be valuable to track incidents of violence involving their guns, reveal what's doing to make guns safer, including smart gun technology, and report on the risks that gun violence poses to the company's reputation.
Right. I got it.
That's a good thing. You could be a business owner, a business investor, and realize that the gun violence could backfire on this company. What are we doing to make sure that we do not look bad in the public's eye to keep the value of our company high?
We sell
those
legal
are all positives.
We sell legal products to law-abiding citizens, and those that use the guns illegally are criminals. So the thing is, we're selling legal guns. These guns are legal. You're protected to be able to have a gun. The difference
doesn't
is this.
Matter if the public perception is negative, then people aren't going to want that.
The public perception is negative because the media continues to pound the drum
that
more and more people are going out and killing people with guns, and they do this simple equation: more guns equals more death. When the facts are, more guns does not equal more death.
Okay,
that's
first
the fact. Do you accept that or not?
I don't trust any of your stats because I've got to study what you give me. But here's the thing. What we're doing here is talking about how valuable this company feels like. Something like Sandy Hook, something like Parkland shooting happens, that is going to give people pause about how helpful it is to invest in guns. Or it might.
Tom,
and so what they're
Sandy Hook, number of people purchasing guns go up or down?
It goes up.
Up.
Yeah, exactly.
Huge.
I know exactly, because there are all these paranoid gun owners who are convinced that, anytime a gun looks bad, we're going to need to buy more guns because the government's going to stop us from buying guns.
Right.
Or the people are going to stop us buying guns.
Right.
So what this is asking is, how does gun violence pose a risk to the company's reputation and finances? So that's a pure business decision, and it would be helpful to know that if you're a business investor.
It's very similar to somebody selling beer. Right? You should be careful because people are drinking your product and getting in cars and they're driving and they're getting drunk, or people are drinking your products and they're pregnant and they're passing it through and the kid is ending up with fetal alcohol syndrome. So on the side of the bottle, they say, hey, don't drink
That's
and drive.
Right.
Or Budweiser says, enjoy a beer responsibly, right?
That's
so they're doing
right.
this sort of thing. So the idea is that we'll sell you a gun, and there's all sorts of warnings on the side of the gun. Don't use it for this and don't use it for that. Those are for the law-abiding citizens, obey those things. But still, every single day, somebody gets in a car drunk after drinking a series of beer or whiskey or something else, right? But the difference is this. The anti-gun folks directly make a correspondence between this. The action of the gun, they don't take the individual's action into account. They look at the That's gun right. manufacturer. The gun is bad. The manufacturer is bad. The NRA is bad. It's not. It's the guy that takes the gun into the school and shoots the people. That's the individual. But we don't want to talk about that because it's so much easier
no,
to go.
You do.
No, I don't. I want to talk
you
about.
You don't want to talk about the individual?
I do want to talk about
That's
the individual.
That's what I mean.
Who's
there are
using
a
gun or using a knife or using a stick or using his hand or whatever else
what
it
is. What this nun wants is gun safety. She wants to improve gun safety. So smart gun technology.
I'm all for that.
Okay. Well, so is the nun. Then you could maybe vote with that. This nun is not doing anything to restrict your gun access. What she's trying to do is what connection does our company that creates these guns have with these kinds of, the gun violence that we're establishing in mass, in these mass attacks?
Uh-huh.
That's information you can find out. What are you doing to make the gun safer, including smart gun technology? These are kinds of things that a reasonable gun investor could see as valuable, and 69% of them did.
If you were to say, hey, you've made the gun, and look at the number of people that used your gun in the act of a crime, does that not also start to create the impression that, geez, the manufacturer may be responsible for the crime?
It might. It
Any
might.
More so than the but Toyota dealer is responsible for the person that runs down somebody in an intersection?
Listen, John, we all are adults. We can decide this information. Right now, you have valued the fact that Washington Post keeps track of every cop killing.
Yes.
Every time an officer
right.
shoots somebody, right. we keep track of it.
Because I love the facts.
Because we had no database. Exactly.
Right.
And that's what she's asking for. She's not asking for anything other than the facts.
There is a database. The FBI keeps track of all those. Every time a gun is used in an act of a crime, the FBI keeps track of it.
No. What are you talking about?
The FBI has track of every time a gun is used in the event of a crime.
What is that going to do with the Washington Post? The Washington Post is talking about the police officers.
The police officer. Here's the difference. The police officer shooting was not accounted for with 18,000 police stickers across
That's
the United
right.
States that lost funding in 1997. Some decided that they would continue to report. Others did not. So then the Washington Post said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to spend the money, and we're going to call
yes.
and check on each one of these.
That's right.
The difference is this. The FBI does keep track of guns used in the act
of crimes.
Well,
then it wouldn't take a hard time to research how much of it's Ruger's.
Right. So
how many
why
of those guns are Ruger's? Well, that's one of the things.
Well, then why should Ruger tie themselves to a criminal act any more than Toyota should tie themselves to somebody running
because
somebody down in a DUI?
Because 69% of the owners of Ruger want to,
okay.
and that's what this is doing. And they're going to look into smart gun technology. If it turns out that, let's say, just 100, there are 100 examples of guns being used in these mass shootings, and none of them are Rugers because they all use a smart gun technology that doesn't allow for these mass attacks. That would be something that they could trumpet, and you'd be more people would want to buy that kind of gun than if it's not used that way. This is the kind of all she's asking for is information and a report, on the smart gun technology.
Right. Here's why I am in favor of smart gun technology. The first company that comes out with it will be the first one and will actually get ahead of everybody else, especially if they can find the patents on it. A lot of people don't like the idea of smart gun technology because of the failure rate. Is it 100% sure? Because right now, on my revolver, if I pull the trigger, I'm about 99.9% sure that bullet's going to come out of the end of that gun, right? Sometimes people get a semi-automatic and it gets locked or the bullet gets jammed in there. You don't have the same thing. Sometimes people are scared of that technology, which is it hooks up to your hand or you've got to wear a device on your wrist that then matches the code on the gun so it can only be fired by you. If somebody's able to come up with that technology and have it 100% sure or at least 99% sure, that will change how people work with guns, right? Because the majority of guns that are legally made in the United States, the majority of them are used in the state of crime, are either stolen, given by a relative, 2% are purchased at gun shops, and 10% are purchased through retail stores. But the thing is, if you got it, and 47% of the crimes were committed, or 40% of the crimes committed with a stolen gun, they wouldn't be able to be used. So that would be the difference. So smart
yes.
gun technology, I'm okay with.
Okay, and the gun, and what this nun is asking for is what can we do, what we as a company are doing to make guns safer.
It's not.
No, but that's what
the guns
mean?
Are safe, Tom.
No, they're not. We'll make them safer.
Okay, so don't have bullets come out of them. Guns are
okay.
safe.
Well, what she's demanding is, and what 69% of the people that own that company do say is, yes, we're good on that.
Okay.
How can you make guns safer? Guns can be made safer. Smart gun technology is one of the ways, but maybe not the only way.
Guns are safe. It's the person who's using the gun that's not safe. Are cars safe?
what John, one could argue that if you have, if there's a way to make a gun safer in the hands of a 3-year-old who inadvertently picks up his dad's gun, that would be making guns safer, and it has nothing to do with criminal intent.
That's the responsibility of the owner of the gun.
I know, but you can also make it safer for the owner, gun owner, so that his kid isn't put at risk. That would be a way to make a gun safer.
Right. All right. Congratulations, nuns. Way to go.
Dominican nun.
Yes. Good.
No Dominicans.
The Immaculate Heart, the Gray Nun Academy nuns, and the Sacred Heart nuns all raised us. Let's see. Silicon Valley comes up with a giant charity hole, Tom. We don't have time for that story because it is complicated. Let's see. Last one that's good. The one that, do we have sound on this one? The body shaming? No. Sexist body shaming ads could be banned under a new rule. Anytime you show somebody that's attractive that's in a bathing suit, that could be upsetting to people, so they have to get rid of that.
Now, wait a minute. First off, we got to restrict this. This is okay. in the UK,
yes.
And it's just being under advisement. There's been 10 months of evaluation, and they're about to bring this forth, and then it's going to get a public hearing. So we're a long way from this. But here's what I think is interesting. It's not just all body shaming. Mm-hmm. It's anything that makes a gender stereotype. It's a negative gender stereotype. For instance, here's an ad that would be banned under the present rules if they were adopted.
Okay.
It showed a man with his feet up and family members creating a mess around the home while a woman cleaned up the mess. The idea that you're suggesting that men are incompetent and that women are the only ones that can clean up a house.
Right.
That stereotype they see as negative against the man.
Yes.
Okay, so it's not just, and then, you know, if they show a man and a woman failing to achieve a task specifically because of their gender, they would call a foul on, you know, that's a foul. This is a broader base than just, oh, do we have a svelte model, in a bikini advertising beach body ready? Is that sexist? It's anything that deals with gender stereotypes against men and against women. To me,
but where do the stereotypes come from?
Stereotypes come from all sorts of social conditions that create the way people operate.
Right,
you don't want to. The idea against it is you don't want to sort of engender more of that.
It's a stereotype that men don't stop and ask for directions, right? Remember that thing before people had phones?
Okay. Yes.
Why was that a stereotype?
Because most men didn't ask for...
So most stereotypes
become
stereotypes through a particular behavior pattern that people are able to recognize over and over
again. But they can become oppressive. Because most stereotypes are women can't do math. Yeah. But there are a lot of women that can do math, but we never see them. And the whole social
men score higher grades in SAT math than women do.
That's right, but that doesn't mean that they may not be that way when they're 6 and 7 and 8.
Okay.
The idea is that there could be social conditions that just sort of fit. Women are meant to do women's jobs like nursing and teaching, and men aren't. And so we want to break that down so there are no these glass ceilings that various genders are up against.
But
it's tough to be a male nurse. 20 years ago, a male nurse was kind of an oddity. I think we're now getting used to it, but you've got to break through those stereotypes. Whether this is the way to go about it through advertising, I think is questionable, and I think it's hard to pull off, but that's intent.
But the other thing is you have 30 seconds or 60 seconds to make an impression, 30-second ad to make an impression. You go to stereotypes because that's the easiest, fastest
thing to get a point across. And if we can kind of crib that a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're used to only seeing white faces. Well, there are a lot of Hispanics.
How about when you see
the
Asian guy, the black guy, and the white guy all eating at Applebee's?
Yeah.
That is the biggest load of crap.
I know, but it's something to encourage, right?
Oh, come on, Tom. As soon as you see that, you're like, that never happens.
Yeah. Why would they let a white guy eat with them?
Oh! Right back. Here we go. Don't forget the know-it-all quiz. Shout out tomorrow, brought to you by Muckleshoot Bingo, giving away tickets to the Mariners game. Let's see. There's a. I said this the other day that if you can't afford to live in Seattle, first of all, not everybody has a right to live wherever they want to live. Then move somewhere where it's less expensive. So I started doing some research. I found Iowa would be a great place.
Yeah,
cost of living very low in Iowa. You could move to Idaho as well. A friend lived in Bellevue. He said, why am I spending $2,900 a month on rent? I can have my exact same life and a little bit more freedom and have more money, go a little further if I lived in Idaho. So he gets a chance to go live in Idaho. So the question is, if things are tough for you somewhere, why not move? Just get up, go, and start somewhere else. Like they did in the 40s or the Grapes of Wrath, John Steinbeck.
Oh, yeah, we're the Dust Bowl era. Yeah, here we come. That worked out great for everybody.
There were a few deaths along the way, but it makes for a great story.
Yes, it does.
Okay. Ma. What happened to Ma? Ma. Yeah. Ma's not well.
Okay, Henry, go ahead.
Henry Fonda, great movie too.
Yeah.
So this is a great issue dealt with in the New York Times says yes, there are. It is true that the people that tend to move in have more money than the people that are moving out. In,
yeah.
Say, and they focus on San Francisco primarily because it's sort of like the hotbed. It's the highest rent rates and the highest home rates and everything else. But Seattle's not too far behind of late. And they say, so why don't people just move to a cheaper place? And they say, well, the problem is if you are of a certain, if you're like a middle class person and you have the means, one of the things that then you can get away with that. And that would be good. Like your friend saying, hey, I can get more money,
yeah.
You know, more value for my money someplace else in the country. But they say for the poorest renters, they're making about 30% of the region's median income. And this is where we're often talking about the people that are always pushing for affordable housing and or the homeless.
Yeah.
The problem is they say there's a shortage of affordable housing virtually everywhere in America, and moving is itself an expensive venture that there's no guarantee that wherever they move to, they'll be able to make more money than they're making here or making as much money. One of the reasons why you have cheaper housing, say, in a place like Iowa is that oftentimes there are fewer jobs to be had, and that's why it's so much cheaper. That in San Francisco, at least, and they take San Francisco specifically, if you have a wage in San Francisco that's a minimum wage that's higher than it is in any other place in the country, that you know, that is sort of a wash here. But primarily, this is the real focus of this article, that for a lot of people, it's not primarily about the economics. They can't afford to live, and they can't afford to move, and so they're sort of stuck.
Uh-huh.
But they say that what we are underestimating is the social network these people live with, even when they don't have money. So if they lose a job or they take a cut in pay or whatever the kind of financial difficulties they have, because they have family and friends and have a social network that they're familiar with, they would rather like move in with another family or move in with their sister or brother or something, even though they're tight quarters, because they think in the long run that it's going to help them out. How is it going to help them out? Well, no, for instance, if you've got kids, a lot of these parents are single moms with kids. You can have daycare,
grandma
or the neighbor, and you can trade off that way. And they also say with a social network, they can tip you off. Hey, did you hear that there's going to be a job opening at the pizzeria or the barbershop or whatever? And so they say the value of those social networks is strong enough that if you suddenly uproot yourself and plunk yourself down in Georgia,
it makes perfect sense.
Not only aren't you going to have family members around, you may not have any kind of connections to find a job even if it was available.
Right. You're stuck.
Okay.
You're stuck in many ways, and you can't get away. Plus, also, if you become dependent upon the government, you can't leave because you're getting certain perks and bennies provided for you by the social services that are there as well. So that also entraps you.
Okay, I would hope that would also be the case in Georgia and Iowa as well, but still, you're already in the system.
Right, right. Okay. You're already for federal, but maybe not for state. You're not getting the same benefits there. Okay, the question is always brought up, how long do you have to live in a particular area to be a local? The Seattle Times has done this story so many times. I like how this guy starts out. This is, Ron Judd started out this in 2015, I think, when he writes, chances are pretty good that everyone is going to hate this. And then he goes on to explain that you could live here for 8 years or 10 or 15 or 20 or 30. And if you weren't born here, you're not really a local and you never get the local badge.
Yes, more or less. So there's a new poll out that says, how long do you have to be here? And by here, they don't mean specifically Seattle. They mean the Pacific Northwest. So even Oregon, what does it take to be considered local to the Pacific Northwest?
Mm-hmm.
And the basic thrust is, there are 20% of Washingtonians think that you need to live here your entire life or you're not a local. So that's sort of on the extreme end. But that's one out of every five think that. Just under that, at least three quarters. The biggest group, though, is at 27%, about half of your life. If you spend about half of your life in Washington or Oregon, then you'd be considered a local by the locals, at least. And then, so to me, I was just wondering, I think it might be more interesting an issue. So I am definitely a local, and I think that it's more interesting to ask people that live in Seattle how long they feel like they needed to live here before they start feeling like a local. Not how we see them, but how you see yourself.
Huh.
So I want to ask you, I thought you're a great example. You've been here like 20 years?
Yeah, I got here in 95.
Okay, so you take a 20-year resident of the Pacific Northwest.
Uh-huh.
Do you consider yourself a local?
No.
And that I find fascinating because I would, as a local myself, I would bequeath you the high honor of being a local into the Pacific Northwest, and yet you don't feel that way.
No.
And why is that?
Because I didn't go to school here, and my memories weren't formed here.
Wow, so that's what it
takes. It was not the tree that I swung, that I was swinging on. This was not the lake I played in. This is not the country club that I was, that I went through hard times in.
Yeah, I'm sure when they ran out of sugar cubes on a Friday afternoon.
That's not the very difficult bunker off to the right there that I had a hard time getting a hold out and par on.
Yes. You have more employment memories.
I know.
Here,
I know,
than anywhere else that you've worked, and you've worked a lot of different places.
I have,
and that did, so you to be a local, your job is irrelevant.
People will say to me, "Where are you from?"
Yeah,
like for instance, I was in Sarasota the other day. Well, where are you out of? I said Seattle. Yeah. Well, where are you from? Philadelphia. Well, where's your home? Philadelphia.
Even
I'm like a big salmon.
Okay.
No, seriously, that feels like my home.
Okay,
so I live
like
here.
Your
that's
hometown
my
hometown is Philadelphia.
Hometown.
Yeah. Okay.
Hometown.
And do you think if you stayed here another 20 years,
no.
if you would never, you're always.
Even my brother said,
okay.
You've spent the majority now of your life not here.
Exactly.
Why do you believe this is it? I said, because this is where my memories are. This is where I was formed.
Yes.
Right. Okay, so that's the difference.
It's where you're formed. Okay.
I've lived in like Grand Junction, Colorado, Champaign, Urbana, Fort Myers, Florida, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Springfield, Virginia, Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And now here.
I know. But here, you put roots. Here.
Yes.
But you don't. Okay.
But it still don't feel like it's home.
Yeah, you don't.
You know what the weird thing is? I got a job in Boston to do a weatherman, and I talked to another weather guy that had been there, and he says, I like you, and he was leaving, going to another market. Mm-hmm. He said, I have to tell you something. People will never, ever, ever accept you here. Never. He goes,
where?
I don't care. Boston.
In Boston,
I don't care if you're on the market, if you're on this air for 60 years, right, and your wife were to give birth on the air, people will not accept you as a Bostonian.
Okay.
Because they have this whole thing of like, it's very parochial, and if you weren't here, because he told me, he said, I went on the air like third week, and I said, boy, it's going to be cold tonight.
Yeah.
And somebody called up, and cold? You don't know what cold is. You weren't here back in 1974. He's just like, oh my God. So every time he would try to at least, you know, sort of assimilate to that culture, they walled him off. And I don't feel like there's a Northwest culture that I'm walled off from.
Yeah.
But it's just that this does not feel like my home.
I think that you don't feel like a local, not because the locals reject you. It's because you, in effect, reject the locals because you didn't grow up here, so your memories
it's
weren't
formed
here.
It's not a rejecting, Tom.
Well, but I mean, but you're not, you don't feel the warm embrace because you don't want to embrace it. You want to embrace
what
your
warm
childhood.
Embrace. This is the Northwest. There is no warm embrace.
Yeah, well, we got a lot of wool on.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you, the people in New York City are friendlier than the people in Seattle.
Okay, yeah. But I would think most people would recognize you as local just because you
become they thought I was local.
Evening magazine.
They're like,
icon.
Well, you got to be local.
Well, a lot of people that grew up here grew up with you, and so they see that you're part of their childhood, even though you're not part of theirs. I mean, they're not part of yours.
That's what makes me so interesting.
We test that to the limit 3 hours a day.
There
Monday
you are,
Friday.
Tom. Anybody's still listening. We'll take a fast break. Come right back. Write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. We do love to hear from you. Tell me where Tom was wrong or where I was wrong by not telling Tom was wrong. There we go.
Loud enough.
Right back. Oh, boy. Doug's Linwood Mazda, Tom. I can't say enough good things about them. Doug's Linwood Mazda. You want to add anything to that?
They're Doug's, they're Linwood, and they're Mazdas.
That's what I was thinking. They got Mazdas there, and they're all there in one place called Linwood, and you got to ask for Doug by name, and then you get to Doug's Linwood Mazda. How about that? Let's see. Before we get started, I want to find out, we're going to take any questions from anybody, Tom? Any questions?
Well, let me see.
Yes, I see the lady in the back with her hand up. See the
lady
in the back? See the lady in the back with her hand up? Yes, lady in the back with the yoga pants on.
Is my pizza going to be covered in cocaine today?
I don't know. Andrew?
Yes, grill time!
Okay, yes. The answer is yes. Thank you. There you go. Hey, here comes the mailman coming by with some mail for you.
Oh.
Doug's Linwood Monster.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail
to your door. Teeny tiny lady, how's it going? She's looking forward to the weekend.
Hello!
Oh, you too. You know, she doesn't care about the weather. You ever notice that about that? If you lived in a pickle jar your entire life, pretty much everything is always copacetic. We're going to get to letter of the day, but first let's get started with the rest.
You know, maybe it's rural.
What's rural? What's rural?
Where she lives, that pickle jar, if she's so happy, she must be out in the rural Canadian woods.
She's down near my ankle. Here we go.
Okay, about crime stats in Seattle 206. About those crime numbers being down, Seattle citizens are resigned to the fact that it doesn't help to call the Seattle police for smash and grabs and other low-level crimes. Police either don't come or it takes hours for them to appear. All crimes occurring in the city are not reported.
That is true. My car got broken into and the insurance company said, have you filed with the police? I'm not going to bother.
Yeah.
Never did. Jonathan, Seattle crime is up in Seattle. My neighbors and I call reported property damage, theft, car prowling, etc. And often the police won't or don't take a report. The only reason Seattle's crime is down, here it is again, because the Seattle is stacking the deck in favor of lowering the rate by not actually reporting crime reports. You know what? That's the fault of the individual. If the individual doesn't give the police the numbers, then the numbers don't have good numbers. So do report them if you feel as if those numbers are beneficial.
Even if you feel it's not going to help you.
Right, doesn't matter.
In the long run,
get on the record. Get on the record, yeah.
About the poaching cycle that we're under in Washington and Oregon, we've arrested up to 17 people for that. 509, Tom just wants his killing done for him. I appreciate that deer steak I hunted more than Tom appreciates that steak that magically appears in the supermarket. Absolutely. That I don't doubt.
Let's see. Tom, hunting is needed. Deer population needed to be kept in check by hunting each year. There are 50,000 reported deer vehicle crashes in Michigan. So those are actual Washington deers going all the way to Michigan.
They're well-traveled.
And then ending in a terrible car accident.
Maybe they were comfort animals for people flying there.
Come on, I'm not making fun of you. Thank you, Mike in Seattle.
Yeah, that's good. Although vehicle deer crashes, whose fault is that? The deer or the vehicles? I mean, we've decided to invade their territory in the woods.
They need to cross at the crosswalk.
Yeah, I got you. 360, have you seen the prices of a hunting license? It's outrageous. Poor people cannot afford to go hunting, which provides the purest form of organic meat you can eat.
I'm a hunter, and I consider myself a good steward of the land. I always pick up garbage after other people and try to leave the forest a little better. But these guys who pay big money to shoot exotic animals behind fences, they make me sick.
There you go.
360 or 306.
Good. And guns and guns and more guns. I own Ruger stock. I didn't vote. I see this coming out to Ruger's advantage. The guns are probably used in less than 1% of crimes, and 99% of those were stolen guns.
Yeah.
This will turn into gold for Ruger. Look at Ruger owners, good guys with guns. That will be their new marketing campaign. Yes, that's exactly what the gun is suggesting.
Quick fact checked on that. The article cites 7 Rugers used in mass shootings, including the one in Mukilteo.
Mm-hmm. That's true, yeah. We did mention that.
Right. Why not install every car with a breathalyzer to stop drunk driving? Again, it's the person that is the problem, not the instrument.
Mm-hmm. 253. Hey, Curly, you are spot on. Good heavens, people. Wake up. Do you all really relish in Big Brother? Curly, we are behind you all the way.
Thank you, 253. I usually side with Curly on topics, but you are so rattled with this safer issue. It's embarrassing. Damn you for making it easier to side with Tom, 253.
And Nicholas in Seattle. Mm-hmm. John, did I just hear you correctly? Did you just say most people are law-abiding citizens? More often, you make the claim that people will cheat if they feel they won't get caught.
That's true.
You use that as reasoning against most social programs, as you think most people will just game the system for their own benefit. That doesn't sound like a consistent worldview.
Well, the difference is this. It's a risk-reward ratio. If I shoot and kill somebody, what do I lose? If I drive in the HOV lane, what do I lose? It's risk-reward ratio, and it's everything within context. Selling CDs on the street, 206. So this guy was selling CDs in front of a magic show? Wow, what a great trick. He made John Curley's money disappear. Very funny, 206.
On the phone distraction issue, 425.
Yeah.
I admit I look at my phone all the time, but that's only to check my trades that I learned through Online Trading Academy.
There you go. 360, banning phones at meetings is a stupid and egotistical method to fixing a symptom, phone distraction. The real disease is either lack of discipline or, more likely, a terminally boring meeting. That's true.
Why go to college anyway? 425, finding the proper partner is the most important thing in life. That's what college does for you.
Right. My mom used to say, ring by spring or your tuition back.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Letter of the day, Tom.
It's about getting out of Dodge for the sweet, idyllic small town life. Happy Friday Eve, everybody. My wife and I are 100% moving to either Idaho or Montana when our youngest finally graduates. Another 5 years, baby.
Wow.
Very low taxes, low crime, tons of outdoor activities, and low liberals. I've been in Puyallup my whole life, 48 years. Wes, in Puyallup.
Out of time. Bye-bye.